Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Jared.
And welcome to the Fixate and Binge podcast, where we discuss our fixation with films and television by digging deep into the themes and messages that transcends entertainment.
And offer our insights and analysis into what makes something worth your time and binge-worthy right now. Test, test. Welcome to the Fixate and Binge podcast. I am Jared.
And I am Joe.
So we're sharing a mic today, me and Joe, because my idiot cat ate the other microphone cord. So we're literally passing the microphone back and forth. But we have a special guest today. We have Kaya Vaught with us. Kaya, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. All right. So real quick, just so people understand who they're talking to, who are you anyway?
That's a deep question. I am Makaya, and I'm your son's girlfriend.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just a only child, about to be 21-year-old woman in college, working two jobs.
Busy.
And, yeah. That's
and
about it.
The only child thing will come into play given the film that you've chosen. So the film that was chosen by Kaya, and would you prefer Makaya or Kaya?
Kaya's easier. Okay. Let's do that.
All right. So the film that Kaya chose is the 2016 20th Century Women. It was written and directed by Mike Mills, and it is a very interesting film that I honestly wouldn't have picked up. I wouldn't have looked at because it's just out of my range. But it is a story about a single mom raising a single son, as in the only child. This is in the late 70s. The kid is about, I think he's like 14 at this point, and he is living in an interesting home situation. His mom runs essentially a boarding house, has two other boarders, but one of the neighbor girls who this boy is in love with tends to hang out at the house quite often. And so it's a story of this kid growing up in this interesting situation with a single mom and lots of female influence, no dad around because his parents got divorced. And how do you feel about spoilers, Kaya?
Like me spoiling it? Like,
yeah,
like
giving away the ending and stuff.
I mean, I feel like there's certain people who care about spoilers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if the movie's good, a spoiler won't matter.
I agree. I agree. So I think, just for a warning, we may partially spoil it, but not completely spoil it, because we just don't want to ruin it completely. But there is enough depth and wrinkles in this film that I think that we'll be able to get, we'll be able to talk about some things openly without ruining anything. Anything to add, Joe?
Yeah, nothing really to add except ditto to everything you said, Jared.
I'm curious, I'm curious if this is a movie that would be up your alley too.
That's a really good question, because while I didn't find all the elements of it relatable to me, I wasn't raised by women, but I was in a single mom situation. In other words, a single parent situation. My mom did briefly take care of me and my two very young brothers when I was around 5. And it's rather kind of an awkward phase of my childhood. It's kind of a terrible childhood, really, before we got taken over by foster care and the war to the state and everything else. But I really, really liked this film, and I didn't think I would.
Really?
And I think because I'm not sure if this film, if I was in their target demographic, like, is this going to appeal to this type of guy? And yet I watched it and was blown away. And this is not the first time, Kaya, that's happened, that we've had a guest select a film that Jared and I haven't watched and would otherwise never watch. And then we watch it and we're like, holy crap, that was amazing. I'm so glad we had that guest on. I would have gone for the rest of my life and never bothered to watch it. And so, I mean, the short and long and short of it is what I'm trying to say, Kaya, is no, I don't think this type of movie typically would appeal to me. And yet I cannot deny how powerful and well constructed and well written and characters that leap right off the page, how powerful it was. I was moved throughout the film.
Yeah.
Real quick rundown of the cast. Okay. So the characters are Dorothea, Annette Bening. You can't go wrong with that. Jamie, who is the son, he's played by Lucas Jade Zuman. Julie, who is the neighbor girl that Jamie's in love with, that's played by Elle Fanning. Abby, played by Greta Gerwig. She is one of the boarders. She's one of the roommates there. She's probably depicting a 24-year-old, maybe 25-year-old woman.
I think like mid-20s.
Yeah. And then you've got William. He's played by Billy Crudup. It's a very unfortunate name. But anyway, he is also one of the other renters of the room. And he's like the only male influence in this whole weird family.
And he's so feminine.
He actually is very, that's a very good point. Before we get started on the film, I asked Kaya who she is. I want to tell you who I think she is, just from what I've seen. She's been hanging out with Wesley for, I don't know, a while, hanging out with some of the kids around here, and I've gotten to know her a bit. I see you as very smart, very kind, very aware of the world around you, very ambitious and energetic, and I think very in touch with progressive issues, especially in things that matter to you personally as a young woman in America trying to grow up and make a place for yourself in this world. So we're really, really happy to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a great...
That's how I see you. That's how I see you.
That's amazing.
Okay, so... First question, what about this film spoke to you? Why'd you choose it?
I literally think that this film, I guess, was like flawless. So everything in it, like it really hit every nook and cranny, it felt like, of my brain. Because like you said, like I do have a lot of things that I'm passionate about. There's a lot of like world things and my personal life experience things. Just the human experience in general is something I'm very passionate about. And it literally was so relatable and real, I felt like, for my personal experience. Living. And I guess that's why I felt so passionate about it, because also I am, my mom and I have, it's just been me and her my whole life pretty much, and my dad was in and out but never really like a responsible, reliable parent, so it really was just me and my mom. And our relationship has always been so interesting, just like the son and his mom are in the movie. Like it's the same sort of a thing, I feel like.
I just realized something, that all three of us have been raised by a single mom for a length of time anyway. Yeah. My dad died when I was a little kid, and so my mom was single for a handful of years. And I remember me and my two little sisters, we remember those days when it was just us four, and it was great, it was wonderful, but it was also rough.
Yeah.
And especially as an adult, you know, seeing it from my mom's point of view, really rough.
Yeah.
So
I feel like the mom in this film is so, so like, just, I don't even know. Like she wants to prove that she is as strong, I guess, as she is by taking up all of these like opportunities and aspects that she can, because she just can. And that reminds me so much of my mom. She's very much like, she's just going to do it because there's an opportunity to, not because there's actually any like reason, just because she can't. Like she's such a very independent, gonna take advantage of everything that she possibly can type of a person.
And that kind of makes me think about this house. So she's living in this big old house, and big and old, and it's kind of fallen apart. And she's got William, the room renter, that's a handyman. He's fixing a bunch of stuff, but it's this massive project. And she's like, well, yeah, like, why wouldn't I? I got the property cheap, yeah, and I'm going to fix it up and we're going to live here. And she's doing a great job.
Yeah.
Using the, I guess, the assets that are around her. So.
And the people that she chose to live with her, it's so interesting. I'm curious too, what your guys' like most like favorite, I guess, scene or character was.
I thought it was, I mean, I was just about to say that. I'm like, I loved Annette Bening. First of all, I love Annette Bening, the actress, mm-hmm. American Beauty and different things that she's been in. She's been fantastic. I even think she was in a film where she played a hostage negotiator called Under Siege with Denzel Washington and Bruce Willis. It's good. It's just Annette Bening is just so fantastic. And then of course she was nominated for Best Actress at this last Oscars, I think.
What?
Yeah, there's a Netflix film called Niad, and it's about a woman who swims the English Channel or swims, I don't know what the deal is. I didn't or swims between the Florida Keys. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I didn't watch it, but I'm ashamed because I love Annette Bening. The thing I really liked about this, though, which is almost what you just said, was her character recognized good people and good influences and then made sure to give them a safe space. And that's incredible because she was raised in the Depression. She's mid-50s. So she's a little bit on the older end in terms of being a mom. Mm-hmm. That means she would have had Jamie when she was in her 40s. And it's just so impressive that she found good influences, people she could trust to be influences on Jamie. And I liked her carefree spirit.
Yeah.
That just spoke to me. I really enjoyed that.
I really love Abby. I love her creative energy, her passion. I think she is incredibly, her vulnerability is so powerful in a way that's just, it's almost disarming. She's just herself and she doesn't apologize for it. And she's comfortable with herself. And she affects Jamie in a really positive way, I think, in terms of teaching him at least one thing, how to treat a woman in a lot of different ways.
Think every young man should have an Abby around.
Absolutely. I think everybody could have used that kind of training. And if you're wondering why, Abby is a fierce feminist. She's into the punk rock scene of the late 70s, and she is fierce, but she's so sweet. She's such a sweet woman.
Her feminism isn't just coming from some random place either. She's had struggles as a woman.
Yes.
She thought that she got cancer
and cervical cancer
from her mom, who she had no idea was struggling with having a baby.
Yeah.
And so fertility, she used, what was it? I can't remember
the drug,
but she was taking a drug to pretty much become fertile enough to have a baby, and then they didn't know that drug would eventually give those babies cancer.
Cervical cancer. Yeah.
And so she was like a double, I feel like just a double reason to become, I guess, just loving, like, I don't know, just that situation to you're not even knowing how much your mom was struggling to have you. Mm-hmm. And then I just can't imagine.
And her feminism isn't born out of anger. It's just, I'm a woman. This is who we are.
Yeah.
There's a scene in the film where she's got her head down on the table and everyone's having dinner and they're like, PMSing. What's up with you, Abby? And she says, oh, I'm menstruating.
Yeah.
And Annette Bening, the mom, she's a little taken aback. She's a boomer.
She's like, don't talk about that.
Yeah. We don't speak about such things in public because there's men and her son is there as well.
Yeah.
And Abby's just like, what? This, I mean, menstruation.
Half of the
population does this. Like, say it. And she literally gets everybody at the table to say menstruation.
Yeah, chanting. Menstruation.
I thought that was awesome.
I also wanted to say that too. Like, what's the mom's name? Sorry.
Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Yeah.
Dorothy. Her character, even though it was like, I just can understand all of their like fundamental characteristics. Like her personality not liking the, her saying menstruating, like, I can also understand.
Yeah.
It's just the way that they all combine is beautiful.
Yeah, I think the thing I really liked about Annette Bening's character, and maybe that belies my own age, that I'm in my early 50s, and so the only character I focused on was the lady who was in her 50s. I liked that she was curious about her son. She was interested, took a genuine interest about his development and his perspectives and his morals and his thinking, and that it concerned her. And that he entrusted the people boarding with them and the girl, the neighbor girl, Julie. Sorry,
she gave him so much freedom on that too. While most parents, a younger parent, would be like so like not nearly as patient,
not at all. And then I liked that the mom was like, "Well, let's go listen to the music that he's listening to." And it's like this lady grew up when Cab Calloway was, you know, big band music was. She was growing up in the Depression era, and she's going to a punk rock show. I mean, that's impressive. Yeah. It's like listening to Allen Ginsberg.
She's like trying to tap into his personality, like understand him in a way that she literally, she thinks she can't because he's at such a weird age.
And I think as parents, I mean, I have teenagers. I have two teenagers and I have a 9-year-old, right? And then you've gone through the whole magilla of raising 4 boys to be men. And it's like, my daughters are nuts about Taylor Swift. And I refuse to go to the Eras concert show.
You're missing out.
I know. I heard I missed out. I refuse to go. And I kind of feel a little guilty because I'm like, my daughters are
into it. You should.
I should. My daughters are into it. And I was like, it's not for me. And so I stayed home because I'm a dude. I'm a guy. I'm a man. And now I feel like none of that is threatened. My masculinity, my dudeness, none of that is the issue. The issue is showing a genuine interest in what your kids are interested in, like, and being present for them.
Those are such matterless little things. And they won't matter in the prospect of life at all. I think that's also what this movie is all about, is that age, gender, you know, all of that stuff, it really doesn't matter. I feel like it just really shows the true meaning of life, and that's just to experience, no matter what it is.
I totally agree with that. Let's talk about the mom real quick.
Okay.
So she was 40 when Jamie was born. That's today, it's doable, but it's still on the old scale. Back then it would have been like in the late 60s, I think, when the kid was early 60s, right? So that was even more dangerous, I think. And Heidi, my wife, she's worked in labor and delivery for many years, and that is literally called a geriatric pregnancy.
Geriatric uterus is too.
Horrible. It's offensive. It's so horrible. But I mean, from the medical standpoint, she's old in regards to bearing children. So there was a danger just to have the kid in the first place.
Off topic, but also I just thought of this, that still in the medical industry, we call a hysterectomy, a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And it literally means hysteria.
Really?
Yes. Hysteria. That's so it was called word? Removing your hysteria as a woman. That's where the name came from. And we still call it that.
Some dick Latin guy made that word
and like
up.
Back in the 60s too, like when a woman was acting hysteric, you know, she was being emotional. They would just give her a Valium. They'd say you're and they would even like, I don't know if this is true. I'm pretty sure though that they like hysterectomies were recommended. Like
just to remove
your hysteria.
That's a bit of trivia that I never knew.
Yeah.
Damn.
Crazy. That's why it's called hysterectomy. And it's crazy we still call it that.
Ouch. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's really insulting. It's, I also think that calling someone getting a nose job rhinoplasty is really insulting. I mean, other people have made the observation. It's like, it's bad enough that they have an enlarged nose. And then to call it rhinoplasty, it's just like you're really heaping on.
I wonder who came up with these names.
An inferiority complex. It's so mean, isn't it? You're right. I mean, it makes you think about Dorothy's life, and it might actually explain why she's so free and why she's so honest and open. You have to think about this. Having kids in your 40s, how long was she married before she had kids? Well, she sounds like she very much was her own woman.
And the way that she described her husband too, like the guy, William, he was asking her like what happened, what went wrong. And she said that the only reason that she even stayed with him was just because she liked the way that he scratched her back.
Yeah.
That was her only reason. Yeah. And it made me think of like Breakfast at Tiffany's and those like age of women, the way that like those, I feel like men-women relationships for them was very much portrayed like that. Like it really was only if it served a purpose, like something like minuscule, like it was only worth it if I guess it was like, I don't know, serving you.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that. Our personalities like that.
Utilitarian.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about Dorothy is she is very open to many things except for her own feelings and her own thoughts.
Yeah.
That's where she just hides. And there's a point in the film where Jamie asks, "Are you happy?" Do you remember what she responded?
Yeah, happy is asking somebody if they're happy is a quick way of getting depressed, right?
Yeah, yeah. And before that, she said, "You don't ask people that."
Yeah. And I would agree, honestly.
Really? You would agree with that?
Why? Would. I think that you can't think about it. Because if you think about it too long, of course there's going to be something to come up that's negative. And of course there's going to be things that are positive. But I feel like everybody knows negative will always outweigh the positive. It just weighs on you more. And I feel like to ask somebody and force them to now think of it, of course that's what's going to come to their brain. I think humans are glutton for, you know, punishment and just say they like focusing on the bad. It's a part of being human. Like it just happens. Everybody wants to pity themselves a little bit. And I think that when you ask somebody that, it just gives them the opportunity to better, like, you know, rather than them just doing it alone.
Yeah. It's kind of like running into an old friend. They're like, "Hey man, how's it going?" I don't think they want to listen to you say, "You want to know how it's going?
Yeah.
I'll tell you how it's going." You know, and then you just list this, you just unpack and dump all this drama on them. And they're like, "Hey man, it was just a term of endearment, or I was just exchanging pleasantries. You didn't have to give me a..." I want to turn into a therapy session.
Yeah.
Anyway, I gotta go. I think they left the iron on. You know.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Was there anything else about Dorothy that we wanted to talk about? I mean,
yeah, I think there's an important part in the film where she realizes she's out of her depth in raising a boy to be a man, and so ironically, but not, she asks the two women who are closest to Jamie to help her raise this boy to be a man.
Yeah.
It's Abby and her friend Julie, the next door neighbor Julie, who weirdly Jamie is in love with.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest damn thing. And she thinks it's a perfectly reasonable idea to ask these two Well, I mean, Julie is 17. Yeah. She's in high school, but
she's so trusting.
She is very trusting.
Yeah.
Very trusting. And of course, Abby is mid-20s somewhere. Definitely takes the lead in this project.
Yeah. But she's not going to make exactly a man that I think the Dorothy is at.
Yes. And I think that's the twist, right? I think she expects these girls to teach Jamie how to be a man from the viewpoint of a woman, but from the 40s viewpoint.
Yes, yes. Her generation.
Yeah, like one of the girls, Julie, tries to teach Jamie how to walk with a cigarette properly, how to smoke like a man. And at the end of it, he's just like, smoking's stupid.
Yeah.
or gross.
They're all trying to make him into whatever they expect. Like, Abby is trying to make him into a feminist man and be an advocate for women in a way that eventually gets him bullied because it's out of the norm. That's not normal for his age or his even demographic. It's not normal. And then Julie is trying to make him into a boy that she'll find attractive. So guys that she likes. So trying to make him smoke a cigarette, trying to make him do all these things. Just everybody is trying to make him into whatever their gaze, you know, whatever fits them, their narrative. And then the mom is doing the same thing. Like, the mom is like thinking, make him into a man, only having this idea. And I think it was so liberating actually, that'd probably be a spoiler. Maybe I shouldn't.
You can do it.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was so liberating when it got to the point where they all just, when he did say that, when he was like, I'm not smoking a cigarette, and he was actually standing for himself, because also a man is all usually persuaded a lot by love, I feel. They're very more emotionally, I feel like, just taken over by emotion in a way that women aren't, especially when it comes to like love, I feel. That's just my opinion. But
so my question is, who has the hysteria now?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Only if they could get a hysterectomy. But I think that, like, just the love, that the fact that Julie couldn't even persuade him to be whatever she wanted him to be, neither could anybody. And then finally, he was just like, I'm going to do me. Like, I just want to be, he just loved everybody around him, and he didn't want anybody to mold him any certain way. And he just wanted to be a part of this world just independently. And I think it was so beautiful.
Yeah, I thought that was, I agree. That was one of the more powerful things about this. I mean, at some point you have to concede that your influence over people in your unit, in your close family unit, has its limitations. I mean, I have strong political feelings. I don't consider myself political in the sense that I'm online arguing with other people about politics all the time. I sometimes engage, but I recognize that I have to be very careful, because my attitudes, opinions about social issues and things like this, they do influence my children's thinking and behavior. But I also have to give them room to develop their own, their own perspectives. And even when it differs from my own, I have to be able to respect that they are their own person. And when we lose some of that influence, or we feel that our influence is not having the impact that we want it to, we at least need to be respectful that they are developing their own attitudes and opinions about the world that they're going to live in long after I'm gone.
And that's going to be, that's so hard as a parent, I feel, to come to that term.
Incredibly hard. Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'm not there at all close to yet, but like, to try to do that, I can.
But one thing I will say is my kids have, kids influence their parents.
Yeah. It can happen both ways.
As long as the parent is humble enough to recognize, I don't know everything. I don't see the world.
Also rare.
Yeah. I don't see the world through the eyes of these kids that are grown up in a different generation at a different time. I think it takes humility as a parent to just say, all right, kid, teach me what you know. Because I do know that my kids know stuff that I don't know. Like, I'll give you a quick example. I literally used to believe, do you guys know what sleep paralysis is?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was raised to believe that sleep paralysis is literally the devil trying to take over your soul, trying to get control over your body.
Like,
so, and I had told these stories to my kids, and mom, Heidi, she also believed that too. I don't know if I influenced her that way or if it was just our generation. That's what we thought. And so one day my second son, Brendan, he came home and said, hey, I learned in psychology something that's interesting. You know that thing where you feel like you have the devil coming on you and trying to take control of your body and stuff at night? That's called sleep paralysis, and it's a psychological phenomenon. And in the old days, people didn't understand, so they thought that there was a ghoul or a demon trying to...
Yeah, there was no scientific explanation.
It was all mystical.
With seizures. They thought that was literally... Right. And then now we know that that's obviously not the devil.
Exactly. So my kid, and I argued with him.
Argued. No, are you serious?
No, I did because I couldn't believe, I felt like a moron.
Yeah. Because you're probably, it was probably that pride. Like, you couldn't believe that, you know, your kid's out there getting educated and actually learning. And then you're like, you feel because like you've taught them that, like it's almost an attack on your parenting. Yeah.
But I did come around. It took me a few days, but I came around and realized, oh boy, I've been living in the medieval times for a while here.
Yeah. I'm curious if either of you were moved like with tears.
We don't cry. Crying's for no. No. And but that does not mean that it didn't have an impact. I remember just being just very surprised at how good it was. And I probably am jumping ahead of the topic here a little bit, but I remember listening to the narration that would come in from different characters. And I remember thinking, this is a retrospective. What we're seeing is a retrospective on the past, and it's a snapshot in time. And what really kind of resonated with me is I grew up in the 70s. Jared and I are removed from, by 10 years. We're about 10 years younger than all the characters in this film, at least the son in this film. And I remember just thinking, I remember the 70s. I remember it. And I don't remember thinking at that time when you think about the present, you may not think of it as the best time of your life, or that you'll look back on it and have a glowing, nostalgic reverence for it. Like, wow, that was really the best time. That was such a unique time in my life. But I remember watching this film and hearing, especially how it ends and, how they talk about what happened to each of the characters. And there were some surprises, but there were some really rewarding results from this human experience or human experiment almost of cohabitating, living together.
In such weird times of their life too. Seem like they're
pivotal, weird, pivotal times in each of their characters' lives, right?
Yeah.
And then when you find out like what happened almost immediately after this little experiment of living together, and they all had such interesting and divergent paths in life. They all went into really exciting ways. And then, and this is probably a spoiler, but the son ended up having children almost at the same age the mother had him.
Oh, really?
I caught that. Did you catch that detail?
What age was he?
I can't remember, but he became a father when he was in his 40s. I might have to watch it again to be sure that I'm right.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty late to start having kids.
Also, what he said about her, how he's like, I'll never be able to fully describe Dorothy to my kids, that made me really emotional.
Yeah, and I think to answer your question real quick, was I moved? Absolutely. Really? The thing that really got me was Abby's health struggle.
Oh.
That was heartbreaking. It really tragic, like truly tragic that her mother's medical advice of taking the medicine for infertility caused her cancer. It's just so heartbreaking.
And the way that she still loved her mom so much and her mom, you can see it. I want to say that every single one of these characters is so real and depthful, even side characters, like the mom.
Yeah.
The mom in this situation, obviously you would think we aren't going to be able to describe it at all. Like I think everybody should watch this movie. Every single person should watch this movie. But the mom, Abby's mom, was so, I think, guilt-ridden.
Absolutely.
And so upset that she almost had to make a sacrifice for her own daughter's health. She fought to have her daughter by doing that.
Yeah.
And then she hurt her daughter. And she couldn't, the relationship completely broke off because of it. And Abby still loved her. And of course, her mom probably still loved her too. But she couldn't even do anything. She couldn't be around Abby. Because of, I think, the guilt.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that. It's hard to know that you've done something wrong, whether it was on purpose or not. It's hard to feel guilt. And sometimes that causes me personally to just seek space to run away or defend. And it causes problems. My therapist, if you're listening, I'll be booking a session with you. Okay, so real quick, I think one of the one of the most powerful dynamics of this film is the mother-son relationship.
Yeah.
And there's a very poignant part here, a scene where Dorothy is talking with Abby about her son, and she's recognizing and realizing the sad truth that Abby will know her son out in the world as a boy growing into a man, if they stay in touch, as his own person, because he can show up to Abby with truth, who he is. He can show Abby who he is. But Dorothy recognizes and says with sorrow, I know him less and less every day.
Yeah.
Because he's growing older. He's becoming, I don't think he's really a true rebel per se. He's just a kid. He's just a kid just trying to figure out his way in this freaking world that we all live in.
I think the way that scene came up too, so Abby, Jamie, and one of Abby's friends all go to a bar.
Yeah.
And they all party. And I think Abby gets this realization because I think she got really caught up. And I think Abby is sad about the fact that she thinks that she can't have children. Mm-hmm. Just, this is seriously what I'm saying. Every single character is so deep. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she's super upset that she thinks that she can't have children and she can't have a baby. So she's taking on this role to help Jamie way stronger than she needs to. So she's taking him out and doing all these things more than she would need, more than anybody is doing. She's just doing the most.
That's a great insight. I didn't think of it that way, but that makes total sense.
And then I think when she takes him to that party, I think she gets this realization, like, I'm doing too much. And this is a kid and I'm partying with a kid. Like, he's only like 14, you know? And I think she gets that guilt and that realization. So she goes and confides in Dorothy and tells her that, you know, like, I'm sorry, we partied too, I think I did too much. And, you know, she's just like kind of spilling all of the beans and like telling her everything that happened. And she's like, are you mad? Like, I'm so sorry, to Dorothy. And Dorothy just says, no, you get to see him in a light that I never will. And she envies her.
Yep.
And I think that could only be said from somebody within her age, having a child that young, or I mean that old, you know, like, I think that just...
It's wisdom.
It really is. Like, to think of it like that, which I had never thought of motherhood in that way, and I love motherhood. Like, it's one of my greatest passions, and I had never thought of it in that light. And that scene, I had to pause the movie, and I sobbed.
Yeah.
Because I have never thought of it that way, that now I'm going to know that when I have children, there's a side of them I'll never, ever be able to experience. Like...
Which makes me wonder, how well do you think your mom knows you as a woman?
It's heartbreaking because I know that not well. I know that I also know that I know a light of hers. It's vice versa. As much as she doesn't know a side of me, I don't know a side of her. And it breaks my heart, honestly. Like, I love my mom endlessly. And from a young age too, I knew that about us. Like, we were forced to be so close. And so it became so much aware that I didn't know so much of her and she didn't know so much of me. And I think once I move out and life gets a little bit easier, for both of us, I think our relationship will be a lot better and I will get to see a side of her that I don't get to, and she'll get to see a side of me that I don't get to, or she doesn't get to. So, but yeah, I would say that I feel that way. I think that it's so true. Do you guys feel that way with your children right now?
Yeah. I mean, I only have one son, and it's not like I value the son over my daughters at all, but he's more relatable to me because we're dudes, we're guys. And I think I know him. I believe I know his heart, and I worry about him more than any of my kids. I worry about him. He also worries about me, though. And that's kind of wild for me, because I'm like, wow, my kid worries about me. Same way that Jamie worried about his mom and her happiness. Yeah. Like, what about you? Aren't you?
And she was almost offended by it.
Yeah. Like, hey, don't worry about me. Yeah. I'm here to. And it's like,
because feels like probably an attack on you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I kind of felt like Annette Bening's character, Dorothy, in this film was like, don't worry about me. We're here to worry about you. And he's kind of like, yeah, but you have a life as well, and it has value and meaning to you. I mean, I know he may not have said it in so many words, but I think that was the meaning behind it. And now me, I mean, I grapple with my own problems. I have my own idiosyncratic issues I deal with. I worry about the future. I'm not always happy with my present. And the way that my past superimposes and influences my present opinions and perspectives on the world, they're tough. I carry trauma from a very difficult childhood, like a lot of us do. I carry certain things that influence and color the way I interact with people or develop relationships. And I saw that in each of these characters. They yeah. all, I mean, even Julie, I mean, her poor mother was a therapist or whatever.
Yeah, actually, we should talk about Julie
more. Yeah, we should talk about Julie. That was interesting. And eventually how that relationship resolved itself at the end
yeah.
with her and her mom. I turned the mic over to Jared. And you guys, let's talk about Julie.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about Julie. So she's 17. She's very independent, very headstrong. She doesn't really like her mother. Would you agree with that?
She doesn't, and I don't think it's for reasonings that are valid. I think it's just because of the age, and I think that her parents got divorced, right? Her parents were divorced.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
And then I think it was like, I did this with my mom too. I remember when my parents, they didn't get divorced, but they're splitting up.
How old were you?
Well, their actual like splitting up, I was 3.
Okay.
But the co-parenting lasted a very long time and their relationship was always so unstable. Mm. And I remember it's the parent that's the reliable one and the stable one, you will lash out the most on that one and you will hate them because you are angry that you're forced to be with them. Even though they are the more reliable one, you can't see it. You're too young to understand.
Right.
And Julie, I see myself in her.
That's interesting.
I was the same way. I hated my mom growing up because I just was angry. I don't know. I just was angry as you do that. And like, I don't know why it ends up happening to the reliable one because I like my dad to me was like an angel, even though like completely irresponsible, you know, couldn't parent. Mm-hmm. That's why I was with my mom. So, and Julie's going through that. So she doesn't like her mom, but I don't think it's valid. I think she's being just a teen girl. And,
you know, what's interesting is I took Julie's word for it. I didn't think beyond the teenage viewpoint, but yeah. that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say that, I do understand. I absolutely understand, this kind of palpable anger and resentment towards the parent that is there doing the dirty work. All right. The unglamorous work, the, you know, reading your bedtime stories or yeah. doing your laundry or making yeah. your lunch or feeding your breakfast.
And they're doing the discipline.
Yes, as well. And then there's the other parent that kind of has sees you every other weekend or every month
they
or whatever.
Fun stuff, fun works, mini golf.
This is happening yeah. to millions of single parent situations where the one that's doing all the dirty work, as it were, the unglamorous yeah. work of the actual rearing of the child
yeah.
gets stuck with the bits that aren't fun. And I can imagine that growing up for a lot of kids, they're resentful because the other parent is the party parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the parent that they're stuck with is the one that has to do dot the I's and cross the T's.
Yeah. And I think get it. Julie's mom makes Julie uncomfortable because
yeah.
she makes her reflect on that because she is a therapist and I think her mom's very attentive and she doesn't like that because Julie wants to be a delinquent and she
yep.
let's mention she lost her virginity at 13.
Yeah.
She's sexually active at a very young age, reaching out for attention a lot, and
yeah.
she even admitted that she doesn't have sex because she enjoys it. She likes the way that they look at her.
Right. And that's a good point because this is the 70s, okay? Now when Julie was a little kid, it was the 60s, man.
Yeah.
It was the 60s and I didn't get a sense that the mom was a flower child from the 60s. Not at all. And so it feels like Julie is absolutely rebelling. I mean, every relationship, I mean, this whole setup with the two boarders and they're all cohabitating. This is extremely non-traditional. It's not as non-traditional today, I guess, but it certainly was in the 70s where they were the religious right was pushing family values. And I mean, this is a very progressive experiment, which is it's just so fabulous to see. It was
is.
A breath of fresh air because you do not see family arrangements or family settings like this. I mean, we all grew up. I mean, 8 is enough. The Waltons. I mean, television was presenting to us in the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
They were
8 is enough and Brady Bunch were both mixed families, though.
That's true, but there was always that was kind of the hook about those shows. They were like clustered families, but they still presented a father, a
yeah.
mother.
This isn't even a this is non-traditional even for today, I think.
Yeah.
The fact that they're all living
right.
in like a boarding house, she's asking a very, very feminine, that wouldn't happen. None of that would happen today,
no.
even.
I agree
with
you.
It's so unnormal, and I think that's what makes it so intriguing, is like, like, it's just such, like, a slice of life that you couldn't even, like, wow, what? Like, it's just crazy.
With feminism being one of the biggest themes in this mm-hmm. in this film, I want to ask, Dorothy is talking to Jamie, or I'm sorry, I'm getting these J names mixed up. Jamie. Okay, so Dorothy is talking with Jamie and asking Jamie to be at the house when Abby gets home from a doctor's appointment.
Yes.
And he asks, well, what if it's bad news? What do I do? And she says something that she says a quote that I think is really interesting. It made me honestly feel really a little uncomfortable because I know it's true. But she says, men always feel like they have to fix things. All you have to do is be there. Why is that so hard for all of you? And I will say,
Abby said that, right?
No.
Dorothy said that?
Dorothy said that to Jamie.
Okay.
And it made me, it stung a little because I know that if I was in that situation with Abby getting this potentially bad news, I would want to comfort her in a way that wasn't really helpful. I would want to say, well, you know, science is progressing. Maybe it'll be better by the time
you're ready. Ways that aren't nurturing.
Yeah. It's like men, as a generality, we fix shit.
Yeah.
That's what I do anyway as a man. And I don't feel like I'm being helpful unless I'm offering suggestions or literally getting up and fixing something and doing something to improve the situation some tangible way.
To be fair, though, that I think it's beyond gender of trying to figure out a way to help, in my opinion, because I don't think, especially in her situation, like, how would you even help? What would you do?
Right. There's nothing to do.
I guess you do just be there. You really just do. And you like offer your, I don't know, like your presence. That's it. That's all you could do. Because there's nothing that you could say. There's nothing that you could do. A hug would be uncomfortable. You don't want anything like that. It would just literally be to like, I'm just going to be around, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I think just learning to be there is a lesson I'm still trying to learn.
Yeah.
Sorry, Heidi.
I think we all are, though. Yeah. I still do. Like, it's also in my nature. I don't know if it's because of my mom's personality type. She's very much also a fix-it woman. She's like...
And she's had to get shit done on her own for a long time.
Yeah. So, like, everything, even if it's not even something that she can fix, she'll make suggestions for you to fix it. Like, she will, like...
Okay, that's interesting. That gives me hope.
So, I also have tried to train myself to when one of my friends who's more feminine than I am is going through a hard time, like, first of all, I don't like hugging in general. So, a hug is already off the table. I'm not going to offer that because I don't want to do that. So,
is that in times of like crisis or just in general?
All of it. Okay. I remember when one of my best friends in high school, her mom was murdered. And I remember finding out, and I was only 13, and I was the first one to like see her outside of our friend group. I just showed up on her door because I didn't know. And she told me my mom was murdered and right in front of me. And I literally was just like jaw dropped, stood there staring at her, had no idea what to do. And my mom had to be the one to go up and hug her because I didn't know what to do. I think everybody doesn't know what to do, you know, and like stuff like that.
You know, this is a story I've never told. This tells you how much movies mean to me. This is the weirdest thing, but yet it was all about how the gesture was received. A really pretty girl that I knew in college. Boy, this is a dark, dark story, but a really pretty girl I knew in college was date raped. It happens. It's an outrage, but it happened, and she was date raped, and I just felt so awful. How's this? I think I should be laughed off this podcast, maybe. But I went and I bought the movie Shawshank Redemption, and I gave it to her.
What? I don't even know what that movie is.
Oh man, I just like, I feel so bad. I feel it's so terrible.
What's the movie?
There's literally, it's a prison film about a prison break, about an innocent man that gets thrown into a prison in old Mississippi, and there's literally a rape scene in that film.
Oh my gosh.
Oops. Yeah. So I gave, I know. Hey, she loved the movie, guys.
Okay, good.
So I took a risk, and she gave me a big hug and was like, that movie.
If it was genuine, that's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, it came from a genuine place, even though looking looking back on it now, I cringe because I'm like, oh, yeah.
Probably not the best idea, but.
Yeah. The I mean, bear in mind, it's called The Shawshank Redemption, okay? So it has like an uplifting arc. Sometimes it's hard to know what to do. My wife is very much not a hugger, and my wife is very, like, very similar to, like, your mom. Like, if you need the answer, if you need the problem fixed, do A, B, and C.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and hold your hand and cuddle and hold you and everything else. And she's like that with me too. She's like, well, then let's just fix the problem. Let's fix it. If you do A, B, or C, then that's how we address it. And if you're not going to do A, B, or C, I don't know what to say, you know? So, and I think, and I'm looking back and meeting my wife's parents, she was raised this way.
Yeah.
She was raised this way. And it's usually by people who come from lower caste or lower, types of, not middle class, but lower class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lower income families.
They had to get their stuff done.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, you got a hole in your jeans. Well, what do you want me to do? Let's sew it together. Your coat's not keeping you warm. All right, well then wear a sweater. I mean, there was a very simple answer to all your whining and your moaning, and you're either going to fix the problem or you're going to be miserable.
There's actually this TikTok. It says, this woman is saying, all my friends ask me how I know how to do so many things. And she does this motion, like an arcing motion, and she goes, I grew up poor. And
it really is humbling. It's humbling. I was fortunate enough to have my grandparents who were well off, but it was by a lot of hard work. So they were my mom had me at 19, and it was like my mom and it was pretty much like she had two babies because of my dad. So she was provided for two people. And so my grandparents were definitely like our safety net. Like, they really helped out a lot. But for the most part, we grew up very, very old, like super, super. And I also, we struggled even extra because I got diagnosed with food-induced migraines at a young age.
Whoa.
At 2 years old. So whoa. I had to be on a strict diet with all whole, like, foods. Like, everything had to be, pretty much, we had to know where it came from. Because if it was processed at all, I'd be sick.
So you literally would be the opposite of happy if you were given a Happy Meal as a kid, right? It would be an unhappy meal, right?
Okay. Except for maybe the apples.
The apples, the apple slices. And they didn't really transition to the apples until a little while ago after there were lots of kids having problems. Yeah. Wild. That's wild.
Yeah.
All right. So we didn't ask you. You asked us, but we didn't ask you. Who is your favorite character?
My favorite character was, I know this is surprising because like we're opposite generation, but I really like Dorothy.
Okay.
I found her absolutely inspiring. Like the fact that she just went and did all the time. Like she was a pilot and then she did that in her last years. And she just wanted the best always. She was so kind, but she wasn't afraid to stand up.
Right. She didn't take much bullshit from people.
No. Like the fact that she didn't think that her husband or her whoever, Jamie's dad, they didn't really do a character at all for that, but, which is good because it's not meant to be, about that. But
the only thing you see of him is the reflection in Jamie's glasses that his dad gave him for his birthday.
Oh, yeah.
In 1974, you see a tiny reflection of the dad. And I wanted to pause it and figure out who that guy actually was, but I couldn't. It just isn't clear.
He doesn't matter.
Exactly. He doesn't matter.
Because Dorothy did it all.
Yeah.
And she was so strong. And I think that's like such a beautiful thing for a young man like Jamie to have. Like, that's so beautiful. And the fact that she just was a pilot and she was so impressive to him. Mm-hmm. That's so important. Like, if I could just be impressive to my children, that's all that I need in life.
You know, my mom, being a widow, single mom for all those years, she is an impressive woman as well. And I can really relate to that admiration because she went through a horrific tragedy with three little kids. My youngest sister was literally 2 days old, born premature, in the hospital still. And she had to figure out, what do I do now?
Yeah.
How do I live now? And she did it. She did it. And we're all healthy and generally happy. And our parents.
Did your mom work too? Sorry.
She did. She did. Yeah. She was the breakfast server at my elementary school for a little bit.
Wow.
She did part-time odd jobs here and there.
Before your dad passed, was she like a stay-at-home mom or did she work?
She was 18 when she had me. So,
oh my gosh.
She didn't have a chance to do anything.
Wow. So that's even more difficult to go from like kind of having a partner in the mix to do do all this, but you were only willing to do it all because you did have a partner in the mix, yeah. And then to lose it.
Yeah. So single moms, I salute you. I love single moms, yeah. Especially those that really hold it down. It's rough.
Yeah.
My parents, I feel like I want to share too. I feel like we're in a therapy class.
I think this is what, that's what this movie does.
It does. It makes you want to it feels like we were invited into a very intimate setting,
yeah.
Where we get to know these characters and they feel real and you see them go through all these interesting intersections and crossroads in their lives. And it does make you want to I want to open up and share my story.
Because
they
are so real.
Yeah. My parents, my dad went to Vietnam. He didn't have to be drafted. He voluntarily signed up to go to Vietnam to get away from an extremely traumatic home setting.
Wow.
His father was...
That's crazy.
Yeah, his father was murdered when he was 19. I never met my grandpa. So he grew up inner city, extremely poor, a horrible...
Choose war instead of your home life? Wow.
And this is what I sometimes tell people. People say, every time I hear someone say, war is hell, war sucks, war is never the answer. There's the small part of me that goes, well, it was the answer for me because my dad was in the Navy and he met my mom in the Navy because of the war in Vietnam. And if they hadn't met, I wouldn't even exist because I was born in a naval hospital in 1973, right after the Vietnam War ended.
It also shows that, the start of war almost happens at home.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It's interesting how we transfer it. We try to run from things that we can't control, and then we end up in a larger conflict, and it engulfs us. So I mean, thank you, Vietnam War. If it wasn't for you, it's so bad, and yet it's so true, right?
But that's part of your story. So, I mean, it is what it is, good things can happen in really dire circumstances or can come out of really dire circumstances. So, Kaya, we typically like to keep it to an hour and we're coming up on that.
Okay.
What else speaks to you? I've got one more thing I want to talk about, but before I bring that up, what other themes, topics, thoughts do you have that you want to share?
I actually wrote a very, I don't usually write long reviews, but this movie, I wrote a review, and I guess to sum up the whole movie, hold on, let me pull it out so I could
write. I have an idea.
Okay.
Because that's going to be way more deep than what I, the question I have. Why don't we hold that for the end? Because I think that's going to be really a great finish. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
Okay. So the music, I just want to talk about the music.
Okay.
It from start to finish, it's punk rock, it's new age at the time, angry music, but then
liberating
music, but then it's punctuated here and there with some horns and with some really classy, cool, slow, smooth music. And I'm curious, I didn't get in on the punk scene. Joe, did you?
Totally did. Yeah, I totally did. I'm watching it and I'm going, oh, look, Black Flag. I loved Black Flag, but I didn't realize Black Flag were around in the 70s because I was listening to their music in the 80s. I was a total skater punk in the early 80s. The mid 80s. I was a total skater punk. So I was like, oh, yeah, Sex Pistols. I see them up there. Okay, yeah, Ramones. And so I was into the Butthole Surfers and Dirty Rotten and Imbeciles and the Dead Kennedys and the Dead Milkmen and Minor Threat and Sonic Youth.
Wow.
I was into all of that punk music. I mean, I have pictures of me in high school, to my parents' chagrin, where I had bangs. I grew these bangs, my bangs, all the way down past my chin, and they were covering up half my face. I looked like Glenn Danzig, Glenn Danzig, I loved all of that scene, all the music, never mind the bollocks, here's the Sex Pistols. I freaking love God Save the Queen, but the Sex Pistols, I freaking love that whole era of music. And so when I'm seeing all this stuff pop up, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, okay. Ooh, the Ramones, yeah, awesome. Iggy Pop, yeah, Iggy and the Stooges, great. And so I fell in love with the music of this movie. It really, I'm glad you brought that up, Jared, because the music was so distinct. And I mean, there's got to be a soundtrack.
It was
this thing.
Perfect 50-50 too, I feel, of incorporating both of their personalities.
Yeah,
Dorothy's
I agree.
Music and his. Even the music did the representation for their relationship. It was beautiful.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the scene where she dances with
William.
William, mm-hmm. Yeah. And because they're trying to figure out what is so appealing about the music.
Yeah.
What is so appealing about it.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they're just dancing, trying to force themselves to dance. And it's so cute. If I you know, my mom did that for me before too. I remember I had her listen to, I loved Cage the Elephant when I was first in high school. Yeah. Like, I think I was a freshman, and I wrote her a note when she was headed to work, and I was like, listen to, I think it was Cigarette Daydream by Cage the Elephant.
Okay.
Because she had never listened to like indie before. She's only ever listened to like Rihanna, Chris Brown, like lots of R&B.
I will say my kids are, they have been a source of great music. Yeah, they have turned me on to so many great bands.
I can attest to that too. They have absolutely amazing music.
Really good taste.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what do you think is the 2024 punk rock? You know, what is it that speaks to your generation, that gets your angst out, that helps express who you are, what you're about, that kind of thing?
I think music is so much more like massive. The world is so much more accessible because of so many different streaming apps.
True.
And so many different just like
So it's kind of a different world.
So yeah, it's so difficult to say, because I could say one thing and then somebody else is going to say something, and it's going to be so niche. Everybody's is going to be so niche, because it's so easy to get diverse in music now, and like have your whole own music taste that doesn't, like, words that I've never even heard of to describe music before. Like when you do your Spotify rap now, it'll use categories for my music that words I've never even heard of.
That's true.
It's like the most insane, like I don't even know what that category of music is, like, but it's saying that that's apparently my number one listen to. Like, you know, so I don't know, like I'd say for me, my getting the rage out and stuff, it's always stayed the same. It's always been like I guess like R&B for me, or rap. Like that's just my genre that I can get really, really into. And like it's controversial, but Kanye is my number one, because I've been listening to him since I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
I've just been I just always love him. And Drake isn't very ragey for me, but like lately, I guess like Don Toliver. These aren't very good people to be saying. It's
No, it's okay. It's like listening to the Smiths with Morrissey, or just listening to Morrissey after he broke up with the Smiths. Morrissey, of course, if you know him, he's got some UKIP anti-immigration viewpoints. And so you're trying to like separate the, I mean, it's a little bit like Kanye. We know that Kanye, he goes there. He's a little, you know, he's Kanye.
Yeah.
And you can kind of separate the music from the man.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have to do that with Morrissey. I'm like, I can't stand his political views, but gosh dang, he's such a talent on that mic.
Seriously.
And the lyrics and everything that come through. I feel the same way. By the way, the phrase punk rock, I don't know when I started saying it, but if I saw something badass or something counterculture or something that was against the grain or that it was daring, I would say that's so punk rock. Yeah. That is punk rock.
Yeah.
And I don't use it as much, but when I see somebody doing something truly daring, truly artistic, and truly ambitious, and it goes against the norm, and they're just doing their own thing, that's so punk rock. And that's exactly who Abby was. She was so punk rock. And punk, it's not a way of dress, it's a state of mind. We forget that. I mean, we think of punk rock, if you say punk rock or goth or whatever, like, oh yeah, you gotta put the chains and you gotta do the mohawk and the knuckles and the tats and everything. No. Punk rock is never a way of dress, it's a state of mind. And I wish we could get back to that.
I'll start bringing it back.
Let's bring it back.
I'll try to like sneak it in there whenever I'm conversating.
That's so punk rock.
Yeah.
I think the most punk rock U.S. president we've ever had was featured in this movie, and it's Jimmy Carter, who I have grown to love and respect over the last several decades of that man. You want to know a truly punk rock president? It's Jimmy frickin' Carter, because that man, he said what he believed and he did what he said he was all about. Habitats for Humanity. This guy, and he gives that famous speech that really resonates with Dorothea in this film.
Oh yeah,
and it's the crisis of confidence. And I urge you to find that speech and just read it. It was during the energy crisis, which would ultimately cost him the presidency to Reagan. But it was during the energy crisis. And there are so many nuggets of wisdom that are peppered in there. And he's talking about the dangers of consumption, the dangers of materialism, and how these things don't lead us to joy or don't lead us to a happier life. And he's talking about cynicism bleeding into life. And I've kind of felt like, and it really resonated with Dorothy. I'm like, this is exactly.
I feel like it resonated with the whole film. That's such a full circle.
It is. I mean, it's really what the whole film was about for me was, in spite, I mean, Dorothy was raised in the Depression. I'm sure she saw a lot of shit.
Yeah.
But she remained just doggedly optimistic about the world and lived her best life. And those scenes with her in the biplane and stuff, just doing her thing.
Yes.
My grandmother, my mother's mother, was very much like this. And that's who reminded me of Dorothea, was my grandmother. Rest in peace. Great lady. I missed her. I miss her. Anyway.
That's beautiful that you're able to relate her to this character.
All right. So I think we're ready to wrap.
Okay, yeah.
And I think the perfect wrap is you read your review.
Yeah, I think Joe like literally just set it up perfectly. The way that you were saying that the speech that they watched on the TV, and the way that they all came together too, mm-hmm. even despite that really, really uncomfortable dinner.
the menstruation dinner.
Yeah. And I think the fact that like it's so real, like we all are engaged and caught up in everything, politics, mm-hmm. life, personal life, family life, like everything. So this is my review. Life is hard, and this movie made me realize that there is not a specific age to be coming of age, and there is no true even coming of age. As the world and people constantly change, so will you. It never does get easier. It feels impossible to trust or submerge yourself into good when we've been tainted by difficulty too young or often. It seems more of an inconvenience than true help or even some final feeling of okayness. Every person has their own unique experience and stories of how they either came to be so difficult or so easy. No less than the other, just fully them for reasons no one but them will know. And that getting to know someone is the magic of life. This movie was a masterpiece. It hit every nook and cranny of my mind. It reminded me that despite the towering realization of life and time, freedom, choice, responsibility, and love, that to just live is the only step required. That so many mistakes can be made in your life and you get to still continue. It is a gift, and it's truly only in how you spend it. Feelings that have been so far sunken down for me from prolonged distractions of stress resubmerged, and I cried like a baby. This movie made me feel seen and whole. My eternal gratitude and admiration to motherhood and the trials and perseverance through all of life. How the difficulties you go through and the longevity work like a boomerang, and however far away you go, the faster and harder you come back to hold yourself. Thank you, A24, for the 20th century woman.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And it was written and directed by a man.
Really?
That blew me away.
No. Well, okay. Well, Greta Gerwig is also one of the stars. I feel like we should say that too.
So. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But that was perfect. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Sorry. I really butchered reading that. I'm not well at reading.
No, you're good. You're good.
But hopefully it all came across.
It did. It all came across. All right. So normally at this point in the episode, we will say goodbye to our guest and then talk about you behind your back. Good things, of course.
Oh.
But she's literally in our studio. So that would be awkward and weird for us to just say, hey, why don't you go to the other room real quick? So we're going to just talk about you in front of you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being here. This has been such a pleasure to have you here and to get to know you better through movies. And this is one thing me and Joe really believe in, that when people watch movies that they wouldn't normally watch, you can see life through the viewpoint of another person that you wouldn't normally consider. And it broadens your perspective and makes you a better person. It makes you more compassionate towards somebody else's walk in life. So thank you for that. We really appreciate you being here with us. This has been
great. I've never even thought of it like that, but that's so true.
That's our philosophical take on movies.
It's like seeing what somebody relates to will really show some, like, I mean, obviously you're just going to see what they're going to relate to.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
I just echo what Jared's saying. I mean, I think that's the purpose of art. I think any art, any form of expression, be it poetry, be it literature, be it dance, be it music, especially music. That's, I mean, one of the most beautiful but heartbreaking side effects or results of tragedy or trauma is that it can sometimes engender beautiful and heartbreaking expressions of what really matters in life. And what really matters is love and listening and understanding and compassion and empathy. And I think that when we have films like this, they are to be treasured. I'm so sorry that this film came out in 2016. It's 8 years old. I never would have watched this, Kaya, if you hadn't come on this podcast. I never would have watched it. And it has nothing to do with not being a Greta Gerwig fan or an Elle Fanning fan or a Billy Crudup fan, because I love Annette Bening. I pretty much would like to spend time watching all of her stuff. But I would have put this film all the way at the bottom of the list of films I would watch from her. And I'm constantly, I'm constantly surprised that people will come on our podcast, recommend something that I never, ever showed any interest in, I'm not the target demographic for, and otherwise never would have spent a minute watching it. And I love being wrong. I constantly love being wrong about what I think is good art and entertains me. I like being nudged out of my comfort place. I just love it. And so, I mean, I cannot thank you enough for introducing this film, because now I'm going to make my wife watch it.
Oh, that's amazing.
And my daughters. I have a 15-year-old yes. daughter. I'm going to make her watch it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think we wrapped it. You feel satisfied?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we're good. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. If you haven't seen the film, go watch it. It's totally worth
it. It's a movie for everybody.
Absolutely.
It's streaming on HBO Max. That's where I watched it. Okay. So it's there now. If you have HBO Max, you have no excuse.
Yeah.
Okay. Any last words?
No.
Alrighty. Well, my last word is later.
Yeah, take care, everybody. Thanks again, Kaya.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Okay, we're done.
Perfect.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Daddy, can we have a cookie?
No.